Everybody, Jimmy Warren here with Guitar Talk. You know, today we've got an amazing show for you. A returning guest. I've had him on. This is the second time. He's a great player. Somebody that I really enjoy watching play and listening to his music. And that I've become friends with him through social media, and I really enjoy what he does. Talking about Rob Balducci. He's got a brand new album out. He's killing it with the Ibanez guitars, making me jealous when I see some of those things. And man, I'm also excited that Rob is going to participate in the I'm Veteran album that's going to come out through Guitar Talk and Mark Tremonti's organization, Take a Chance for Charity, where all the benefits, all the proceeds are going to go to help veterans with PTSD through the Guitars for Vets program. That's going to come out later this year. Rob has agreed to participate in that, which I'm really excited about. And, you know, I'm trying to put a show together in Pennsylvania with Rob later on, a Jimmy Warren and Friends show. And so hopefully that'll pan out for August in that. But in the meantime, man, we've got the guy, man. We've got Rob Balducci right here on Guitar Talk. So do yourself a favor. Sit down, you know, put your feet up, get a nice, cool beverage. Enjoy yourself in this conversation with New York guitarist Rob Balducci right here on Guitar Talk. What's going on, Rob?
How you doing? Can you hear me?
I can hear you good, man. How you been?
Good, good. Good to see you.
You're a busy guy.
I'm trying to be.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Isn't it hard, you know, trying to be an independent artist? I mean, it's a lot of friggin' work.
I know. I mean, I see you. You're getting out there.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just doing what everybody else is doing, just trying to get in front of as many people as you possibly can, you know?
I know.
Yeah. So before we jump into this and we start talking about your album and everything that's going on, I know that a while back I saw you post that you got one of the Ibanez Tele style guitars.
Yeah.
I mean, tell me what, I mean, I had been thinking about one for a long time, well, since they came out, and I've just never pulled the trigger. I mean, what are they like?
I love it. I really do. I love the neck shape on those, on the AZ. The AZS is very similar, except of course it's a shorter scale than my other AZ, which is a 24 fret.
Right.
So the 22 fret, I mean, it feels nice. I mean, I like the tension on the guitars, especially, you know, there's a difference. I'm not like totally against locking. I have a bunch of locking stuff, but recently I've been playing those with just the, you know, no locking nut.
Right.
And I think it's cool because I always wanted a Tele body, but I am a vibrato, you know, trem nut. So I'm glad that it has it. The model I had has it on it. And it sounds great. I mean, I like, listen, the pickups that it came with, I sounded really nice. Since I'm getting a Tele and I played, you know, of course I'm endorsed with DiMarzio, I switched it, but I wanted to get like more of a traditional Tele. So I put a Twang King in the neck. Ah. And I put a Chopper T, sort of set up like a Richie Kotzen Tele, and it sounds great.
Yeah, yeah. So the one that they sent you, I mean, did it have Tele style pickups in it, or was it hot rod?
It had a Sir Tele pickup in the Seymour Duncan Tile style pickup that was made, you know, like a single or a stack in the bridge, and the neck had a mini humbucker, which is fine. But the Twang King is more of a traditional thing, so I got that instead.
Right. Well, cool. I wanted to ask you about it because, you know, I know a few people that play them in that, but I've never asked anybody, you know, what they really, really thought about it. Because, you know, you're an Ibanez guy to the core, which I think is cool. You know, I think they make great guitars. I think I bought my first one a couple of years ago. I bought the Tom Quayle.
That's nice.
It's a great guitar, and I ended up right after it, I ended up buying two more simply because it was such a great guitar.
Yeah, I love those roasted maple neck things too. I mean, they don't move.
Well, they're similar hollow body guitars too. I got one called an Expressionist, which was an AZ as well, and then I got or a Prestige, and then I got the John Scofield
guitar, wow,
which is really, I mean, both of them are super, super nice, man. They make great stuff.
Yeah.
So what's that relationship been like? I mean, was it hard to navigate that and get that relationship to begin with? And what's it been like to, you know, be partnered with Ibanez?
Well, you know, it's been such a long time. I mean, last year was like my 30th anniversary. So this year it makes 31 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a different time, you know, when I got like 31 years ago. You know, what basically back then, the way it was you would try and get in touch with the companies. At that time, you know, it was like 4-track tapes or whatever, you know, that you would send it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been sending Ibanez like to the Ben Salem, place. I've been sending them demos. And, a couple of times I was like at some events, music events, and I met the Ibanez, one of the Ibanez rep at that time, his name was Bill Kaminsky. And I remember giving him a tape and talking to him. He was a really nice guy. And, you know, time passed. And then I remember this day, you know, I went to see Zappa's Universe, November 1991 I can't remember the club, but it was a club in New York City. And I got backstage and the guy, Bill Kaminsky, was there. So I went up to Bill and I said, "Hey, Bill, you know, did you have a chance to listen to that, those demos and stuff that I've been sending you?" And he was like, "You know, I really did. I did." And he says, I like it. And I said, "Well, you think we could do some, you know, an endorsement or something?" And he was like, "I think we can." He said, "Definitely." He said, "You know, give me a call." We shook hands. And I mean, that was the start of it.
Yeah, yeah, that's really cool. 31 years. I would have never had any idea. Yeah, I thought you were only 31 years old.
Well, I started when I was 2.
That's crazy.
But you know, the other cool thing about it is, you know, it's the way the industry was at the time, and yeah, you know, I'm kind of like loyal, like all my endorsements. But I mean, it was a handshake endorsement deal, and it's been like that ever since. I mean, I have no, you know, handshake endorsement deal, and it's been like that. And, you know, I'm like that with the other companies that I'm with. DiMarzio is actually probably 2 years before. And D'Addario Strings is 1990. And I mean,
wow.
Morley is another one I've been with a long time. You know, once I, you know, 1996, when my album came out, I think I got an endorsement with Eventide, and I'm still with them. You know, it's my thing is you use the equipment. Like, I'm using that equipment because I liked it. And then when you go and it's possibly to get some sort of endorsement with a company that you already love the equipment with, I mean, that's just icing on the cake. You know, I'm not really the type that, like, you know, and I've got offers before, but my company saying, "Hey, we want to endorse you, blah, blah, blah." If I'm not really into the equipment, why would I want to? It doesn't make sense.
Right.
So it's not really and my career, it's never been about how many endorsements can I get, what can I get for free, this or that. It's really, what do I like? What am I working with that I like? Will these companies work with me? And if they do, it's like, you know, unbelievable for the companies that I'm working with. You know, I've been fans of them since I'm a kid. So to be able to have that relationship is just amazing. And I'm pretty lucky.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems, I mean, you know, I'm sure that people that are listening, this is kind of, this conversation's kind of going down a path here. But people that are listening, that they might ask, you know, agents and managers and people like that pay attention, though, to those types of things, right? So, like, if you have good endorsements with good companies, you know, somebody that's paying attention to you that might want to consider managing you or booking you or something like that, that's a plus, wouldn't you say?
I think so too. I think, you know, especially, I think it says a lot about the guitarist or the musician that's endorsed by a company, because it kind of gives you, you know, it gives you a validity, I guess, you know, that these companies behind you, maybe there's something, if they haven't heard you before, maybe they'll take a listen, you know?
Right, right. Exactly. And speaking of taking a listen, you've got a new album, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us about it? I mean, is it out, officially out now?
Yes, it came out. The name of the record is called Transcendence, and it came out on January 7th of 2022. I've had it, you know, with everything that's going on in the world, that, you know, we were supposed to release it 2021, and I kind of held back. But I decided, hey, let me get it out there. It's, you know, I think it's still kind of crazy out there, but I figured, let me get it out. Because, you know, I wanted to release it, especially when you're sitting on new work,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it came out, and I'm really excited about it. I have a little CD here, so that's the CD.
Yeah.
And it's available on CD through my website and everywhere else you can get it on, you know, digital download sites and streaming stuff. And I think it's an important record to me. It's a personal record to me. You know, a couple of things happened within the release of this record. The producer of this record that produced it with me, his name is Steve Simonson. He produced my last record, which was 821 Monroe Drive. And he ended up passing away in December, right before the record was released.
Yeah.
A young guy, you know, so that was a real shock. I feel really, you know, it's sort of like a bittersweet, you know, the album is out and he wasn't here with me, you know. But it does have to do with, you know, there is sort of like there's an inspiration behind the record has to do, that's why I named it Transcendence. It has to do with really the last couple of years of my life, where I lost my, I lost both my parents.
I didn't know that, man. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And so that's what the inspiration on the record is about. And, you know, when you're with, you know, when it's a personal thing, you know, and someone passes away, you kind of, you know, it has you thinking about everything, you know, your life, what happens after people pass away and stuff. So that's where the transcendence comes in. I was trying to find a title that kind of captured what I was thinking about. And, you know, transcendence, you know, if you look it up, there's a lot of different meanings, but to me, it's you sort of like, it's a you're transcending to another realm. You know what I mean? Your energy, to me, your energy is still here when somebody passes, you're just someplace else. So that's kind of what the title represents.
Right.
And, you know, if you look at the cover, you know, originally, you know, there's like my shadow. So this is a shot. The shadow's there, and I had a friend of mine, Ashley, she went on and kind of messed with it a little bit, and that's supposed to be like me. Right. And then, you know, now with my buddy Steve that passed, he was a guitar player as well. So to me now, that's Steve there. Steve's always with me, so it sort of has a dual meaning to me now.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, one thing I could say about your music is that, you know, although it's instrumental, it's kind of diverse. I mean, there's a lot of elements to your music that, you know, isn't just straightforward, you know, rock, you know, guitar, instrumental stuff that, you know, people always, you know, when you talk about, well, it's a guitar instrumental rock album, people automatically think, okay, it's going to be like Steve Vai, or it's going to be like Joe Satriani or something like that. And I think that's unfair to say, because both of those guys have some really unique, you know, music that's diverse, but you're the same exact way. So, I don't know where the inspiration to be diverse like that comes from, you know, because I hate to say I've always been a one trick pony, right?
Yeah, I mean,
where does that come from?
Well, you know, I think it comes from, you know, being influenced by a lot of different music, first of all. So, you know, I'm a guitar player and I like guitar related music, but I mean, I kind of run the gamut of what I listen to. You know, I was a lot of jazz when I was growing up because I went to like a music college. It was a jazz program. So I got shown a lot of that type of music and, you know, world music I like. I mean, there's so much stuff. So you kind of like, you kind of grab things as you're developing, and little things here and there kind of stick in your head. And you know, I always thought of it, my instrumental songs and my writing to be, I never really thought of it as an instrumental. So I always think I take the approach as I'm writing a song. So the guitar melody to me, that's like where that's the vocal. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a song for me to just go and rip over, and you know, which there are some stuff like that, and there's nothing wrong with it. But what I try to do is I try and write something that as if the guitar is just taking place of the vocal. So there's a verse, there's a chorus, there's then a solo section, goes back to the, you know, the chorus and so on, and this, the guitar kind of mimics as much as I would be able to, you know, if a voice was singing. So I'll put a harmony on that, you know, in certain parts. So I think it makes it interesting. And, you know, not to say that it's like AAB and it's like, that's not really where it's at either, because I find that, and a lot of people tell me, like, you know, they listen to one of my tunes and they'll be like, I didn't expect that part to happen. Right. And that really happens from you know, using your ear and writing from, you know, writing from, your heart and from inspiration. So like, I don't really sit down and say, you know, hey, listen, I got to write a ballad. I got to write a heavy song. I've got to write in C sharp minor and put it in 13-8 or something. You know, that's not my school. My school is I sit and I think, you know, I'll come up with, like there's a song, say Tomorrow Never Comes off the new record. I have that title, you know, first off, because the meaning behind it is, you know, my parents passed away, you know, say Steve passed away. We all have people that kind of pass away. So, and especially now with the way things were with the crazy stuff with, you know, the pandemic. So you never know really what tomorrow is going to bring. So right. That kind of what I got that kind of idea. And then I sat, thought about the people, and, you know, and then I wrote the melody, and never thinking about like what key the song is in. It's just, I write a melody, maybe I'll hum, you know, I'll think about it. I that melody I kind of had in my head, and then I tried to figure it out what I was hearing. And then I played it, and you know, that's to me, that's the best way to go about writing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the melody is really, you know, that's everything in a song. Doesn't matter if it's an instrumental song or if it's a vocal song, the melody is everything. And coming up with a really creative melody for an instrumental is, I mean, it's the fun part, in my opinion, you know, in that. So do you start out when you're writing a song, do you start out with, okay, I've got an idea for a melody, or I've got an idea for a rhythm, or is it a variety of?
It depends, you know. Sometimes I'll have like a nice chord kind of progression that maybe I say, you know, I kind of like the way that is, and then once you have the chords, then, you know, a melody comes in. Or it's usually easier when you have a melody first, because kind of then the chords almost get dictated by what the melody is. Mm-hmm. But when you have chords to me first, I mean, you know, I usually have a process where if I have like this really nice chord progression, you know, it could be three chords, two chords, whatever it is, I'll put it down on tape, and then I'll constantly listen to it. You know, I'll listen to it and listen to it. And then I try and see, like, in my head, I try and come up with like what kind of melody I'm thinking about. And then once I kind of get something, then I take out the guitar And then I'll say, all right, I was thinking, da-na-na-na. So then I'll say, where's that? What are those notes? You know, and I'll figure out where the notes are. And I think that's the best way to do it because, you know, if you could sing something, most likely, you know, somebody else is going to be able to sing it and remember it.
Right. Well, and that's the hard part is creating a melody that sticks in people's head.
Oh, yeah.
To where, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, it's your always with me, always with you type song, you know, that just people just automatically know in that.
Yeah, so, it's not easy, man. You know, it's like, you know, this is my, I guess it's my sixth record. I got to count back. But, you know, each record has gotten a little bit easier because this process that I have, you know, I'm starting to get better at it. But it's always like a hard thing to do. To write, and you always got to edit yourself. So, like, if the melody is five notes, I'll play it and I'll listen to it and I'll be like, do I really need the five notes? Can a melody express something with just three of those notes? So always try and edit the melody if it needs it. Sometimes it's, you know, you're like, wow, I don't want it. I think that's great, but sometimes if you can edit it to make it a little simpler, then it makes the song simpler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are you somebody that likes the recording process? Do you like being in the studio?
Yeah, I really do. I like it a lot.
No, I can't stand it personally. That's why I don't like it. You know, do you find that you play differently in the studio than you do live?
You know, I used to think that, especially like, you know, the first couple of records was you went into a studio. I like the whole experience of the old school days where it was you went into a room and you rented out the space. And but there's good things and bad things about both. Of course, there's the money aspect because you're going in a studio and you have to pay for it. But the whole idea of like going there, blocking it out for like 3 weeks and getting it done and bam, it's done. And then, you know, I'm a foodie. So, I like the experience of going there. All the studios used to have a food menu and you can order from the local restaurants wherever you're recording. I kind of like all that stupid stuff.
Yeah.
But now, you know, the last couple of records, you know, it's been doing it in my home.
Yeah.
And I still find the process exciting, you know, being able to put it down. And I got more comfortable with performing and playing in my own environment. So it's something that you just got to get used to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a really weird like thing when I record, even when I was recording in another studio, is like, I really don't like to hear my guitar sounds loud. So like if I'm have the I'm doing a solo or I'm recording the melody and the tracks are done, I'll have those tracks through the monitors. My guitar track that I'm actually playing will be like very, very like minuscule in the background. Or if it's mic'd, like there's a closet back there where I have a mic, it'll be mic'd. It's against the wall. There's sound stuff around it, so really can't hear. I'll put like headphones on, earplugs, so that I'm really only getting, you know, like that. You know, you ever put your amp against the wall, that sound that you get, you only get kind of the bass response. Mm-hmm. That's the way I like to play and record, because I feel that if you're too loud and you're hearing it, it affects the way you play. And I mean, anyone could do it. Might take it. That's why people like playing not plugged in. They feel that they could play better on their electric when it's not plugged in. And all of a sudden you plug it in, you're like, what happened?
Yeah, what do I do now? Yeah.
it's that same thing. So like when I play live, I don't use there's nothing in the front monitors. I'm just hearing what's coming from my amp in the back of me. And then the drums and everything are coming through there. The bass plays come through there. And I just hear myself a little bit.
Yeah. Wow. Because that's almost polar opposite of what most people would want. Because most people want to be really, really loud. But you know what? I think when you're in a live setting, I think it's really important to have a minuscule volume on the stage. Because sometimes, you know, especially, you know, when you're doing vocal parts in it. But because it gets so overbearing.
Yeah.
It's really hard to control sometimes what's out in front of the audience.
Because, yeah.
You know, you got your sound guy going, well, you know, you're on two and I can't go nowhere else. You know, it's like, you have to turn your amp. I've had my amp and I'm like, the sound guy's going, you got to turn down. And I'm like, dude, I'm on 1.5, you know, you know, it's 1.5. It's like, you got to have more control than that. Come on now.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I always found that I played differently in the studio versus live. And part of it is because I'm not comfortable in the studio. I don't know what it is about it. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I don't feel like I play like myself. I feel like I'm trying too hard. Yeah. Uh-huh. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. But when I'm at home and I'm in my own little personal space and I'm recording in that personal space, well, you know, then all bets are off. But you get into a studio where you're spending money and spending time, it's like, hate it.
Absolutely
hate it. You know, so do you plan on, you know, I know things are still a little iffy and crazy in the world right now, but it seems as if, you know, things are, you know, working towards, you know, opening and that. Are you going to get out and
we're going to try, you know, right now, to be honest with you, we're still kind of waiting to see, you know, if you notice, like John Mayer just played Madison Square Garden here in New York.
Yeah,
drummer and the bass player came down with COVID. So I mean, it's still crazy. I mean, so right now, and the other thing is, since my band and I, since we've all been in this craziness, we really haven't. We started to rehearse a while ago, then it all like went backwards again. So then we stopped. So I have to actually get the band rehearse with them first, and then start. So there's a lot of steps that have to be taken. So right now, we're kind of waiting and seeing how things go. And in the meantime, you know, I did my first kind of live streaming thing with Ibanez actually 2 weeks ago or something. And I got like this little thing that a Zoom controller thing that hooks up to my computer, and it's like a mixer, and I'm able to get a decent sound. So I think I'm going to start to do like more like live streaming events. So maybe I'll do like an event, like from my own website or from my own pages, and, you know, Rob LDC live, you know, from the, you know, performing stuff from the new album, or then maybe I'll say, you know, stuff from, I have, you know, my Violet Horizon record. I'll say today, you know, 2 weeks from now, I'm going to be playing on Friday, you know, whatever. And I'm going to be doing stuff just from Violet Horizon. Or maybe I'll put something out there and you know, people could request certain songs they want to see. And that's what I'm going to start to do now. And then we're going to weigh the options and see how things are going. And then we'll probably start doing something.
You know, those are good ideas. You know, guys like Larry Mitchell and Andy Timmons and that have continuously done.
Yeah.
You know, like Larry does 2 a week, you know, electric and acoustic in that. But the benefit is that it keeps you in front of people.
Yeah.
And it puts you in front of an audience that you might not get at a club in New York City, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a really good idea for people to do that, you know, to stay in order to stay in front of people. You just have to bombard the hell out of everybody with what you're doing, because if not, you get forgotten about, you know?
I know. I mean, I'm really sad about that. We've been doing the Dallas Guitar Show for the past freaking, I don't know, 7 years, 6 years. And last year they had it, but it was still crazy. The year before it was canceled, and they're doing it again this year. It's coming up, but we didn't do it because I didn't reach out to them because, again, we're not rehearsed. So I don't want to go, and, you know, it's not worth playing if you don't sound good.
Yeah. You don't want that.
Yeah. So I'm hopefully next year we're going to go back to that show. I'd like to also get back to Austin. I haven't been there in a while to do something in Austin. So maybe we'll make a little run of it or something. So we got to think about it and see how things go.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I wish you all the success with the album, you know.
Thank you so much.
Great. I appreciate you sharing it with me and that. I like what you do. I'm a fan, of course, you know.
Thank you.
I hope that you know that. And I appreciate all the stuff that you put on social media, because you're always, you know, doing something cool, you know, and in that. But, you know, hopefully you can get out and maybe, you know, in time come to Chicago.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah.
Come to Chicago. Maybe, you know, I can help you do that if, you know, need be.
Cool. Maybe we could do a show together or something.
Oh, man. Don't get me started.
Yeah.
That's my whole thing. I'm doing a series of shows this year called Jimmy Warren and Friends with people that have been past guests.
Cool.
And yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm thinking about doing one at the Roxy in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, at the theater there.
Oh, that's a nice.
Yeah. So I don't know how far.
That's not far from me. I played a couple of shows at the Sellersville Theater at one point.
Yeah.
It's nice out there. It's not that far. Keep in touch with me.
Yeah, let's do that. That would be great. That might be cool.
Yeah.
All right, man. I appreciate, you know, you telling us about the album. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. And stay safe.
Oh, thank you so much. And again, I just want to get it out there. You know, I do have a new website. So we redid the whole thing. The merch store is there. So it's robbalducci.com. We got t-shirts. The record is there with special, like a bundle package where if you buy the new CD, you get like one of the other ones for half price. So definitely please check it out.
Very cool. Thanks a lot, Rob.
Take care. Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that conversation with Rob Balducci. Man, I always love talking to him. He is, once again, a great player and a superhuman being. And I want to, you know, huge shout out to Rob for participating and giving me the opportunity to share his music with you. Make sure that you're following him on social media. Get a copy of his new album. And if you get the opportunity to go see him live, you definitely want to make sure you do that. Until next Wednesday, I'm Jimmy Warren. Thank you so much for tuning in to Guitar Talk. See you around.